From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. While the U.S. Senate was focused on Russia, Russia, Russia on Tuesday, the situation in Syria has reached a point where the risk of war between Russia and the United States is very real. For more on that, we spoke with Mark Sloboda, retired U.S. naval officer and senior lecturer at Moscow State University, via Skype from Moscow Wednesday.
There's been slow motion developments since Aleppo was liberated by the government and its allies. There has been a noticeable fall off in Syria reporting from the Western media. They just seem to not have as much, shall we say, skin in the game. There was an agreement by Turkey and Russia and some others to create an array of de-escalation or de-confliction zones in certain areas. This has really had mixed results, but it has allowed the Syrian army to free up some troops and send them further east. In the meantime, it has to be said that pretty much all of Idlib province, nearly all of Idlib province, is still in the hands of what the Western media alternately describes as rebels, or in rare moments of honesty admits that everyone there are jihadis. And the largest of the two groups, of course, being HTS, Hadar al-Sham, or as it's more commonly known, Al-Qaeda. Previously, it was known as al-Nusra. They've undergone several name changes since then. And Al-Qaeda essentially rules Idlib province. The strongest other force there is Hadar al-Sham, which is a splinter group of Al-Qaeda that has formed its own Salafist jihadi group that claims a more national focus. They have been supported by Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, and have at times been presented as the idea of kind of like the good Al-Qaeda. The jihadis that we can do business with. Their ideology is really essentially the same as Al-Qaeda or ISIS. It's differing mostly in egos. And Al-Qaeda and or al-Nusra then in its guise and Hadar al-Sham have had multiple meetings over the last 3 years to try to reform into one. But it has never quite gone through, and usually they end up instead fighting each other again. Right now, Hadar al-Sham and Al-Qaeda, after another lover's quarrel, are again fighting each other. This is most recently in the last few days. But this is all kind of self-contained in Idlib province, which is on the Turkish border, a mountainous area that really it's a low priority for the Syrian government because it has it has light population and very low economic value, very low economic industrial activity and so on. So this is kind of like a playpen or a cage, if you will. Various places, jihadis and hardcore Islamist groups from around the country that were penned up in ghettos, blocks from various cities and towns were given deals to surrender and be moved to Idlib. to live under the roof of Al-Qaeda, as it were. And so all of Idlib province is essentially one big playpen for Al-Qaeda and friends. For the moment, they're mostly turned on each other, that's where they'll sit, at least for a while. Right now, the real game is all moving to the east, particularly the southeast of Syria. This is a mostly desertous area. In the very far southeast corner of Syria, between the borders of Jordan, Iraq, and Syria there, the U.S. quite some time ago established a small base that is known as Al-Tanf, the area that it is there, the Al-Tanf base. And the U.S. has, over time and continues, to try to manufacture another Sunni moderate rebel force there, which currently goes by the name the New Syrian Army. It's really not large enough to amount to anything on its own. But the desire of the U.S. and Jordan, who is assisting it there, was to train up a force of Sunnis, rebels, moderate rebels, supposedly. Although previous times at Al-Tanf, we've had these moderate rebels who have gone full jihadi and then killed several of their U.S. Special Forces trainers. In both numbers and final result, it often hasn't worked out too well. And from special forces that still have contacts in the military, they've reported that the U.S. Special Forces are not very happy to be training these people.
It appears that this highway that it's on, Al-Tanf, is a supply line from Iraq, and also there's a highway route to Damascus from there, although it's a good hike almost across the whole country.
Yeah, it's a crucially important highway for gaining control of the east, the far east of this country. If you take a look at a map, you'll see that large stretches of the country are still either controlled by ISIS or others. But this far east is really sparsely populated. It's mostly desert, and there's this very important highway that goes across that and crosses through Al-Tanf. It runs all the way from Damascus to Baghdad, and for securing the east of the country, and for reestablishing control of the Iraqi border and trade with Iraq, this highway is crucial. And this U.S. Base now basically straddles very close to that highway, effectively controlling it. The U.S. has declared its own self-proclaimed 55-kilometer deconfliction zone around Al-Tanf. And as the Syrian army has moved further and further out here within to this area, battling ISIS, the U.S. has started attacking them. We've seen three attacks in Al-Tanf in the last month. These are completely unprovoked. They were simply possessing a threat by traveling in convoys nearby. It has to be remembered that the U.S. has no international, legal, moral, or even national mandate to be in Syria, right, much less attacking the forces of the Syrian government who are engaged in combating ISIS.
Right. This is an important point. This is a very important point.
Important point. Now, of course, it's not only Syrian government forces who are there. There are allied militias, including some Iranian and Russian advisors, but also a lot of Iraqi Shiite militias. And you might be surprised at wondering that. Wait a minute. Aren't we allied with Shiite militias in Iraq, often Iranian-led, who are fighting ISIS? Yes, we are.
Right.
But on this side of the border, they're bad. And one of the things you'll notice in the New York Times, I'm looking at Anne Barnard, and elsewhere, you'll see a constant refrain now of justifying what the U.S. Attacks on the Syrian government forces and allies around al-Tanf as not even particularly against the Syrian government, although that is occasionally mentioned too. Of course, the fight to ISIS must be in there somewhere, you're sure, although you're not sure how that works out when the U.S. is attacking the forces that are also fighting ISIS. But you'll hear now references to that it's against Iranian influence, and we can't let Iran gain control of East Syria. Mm-hmm. Not that that was ever a problem, because of course the governments of Iran's rather small forces, it's usually special forces and advisors, much as the U.S. has done in other parts of the world, but they are legally invited to Syria by the Syrian government to help fight ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and the other 31 flavors of jihad that plague the country. And there's no danger of them taking over East Syria. But of course, now they start making reference to a Shia arc of influence stretching from Iran through Iraq, which was liberated by the United States when they took out Saddam Hussein, who was a Sunni leader. That created this whole arc of influence. But then it goes through Syria, which is Iranian allied, through Lebanon, which has Hezbollah, which is also allied with both Syria and Iran, then into the Atlantic. And this is largely a canard built up by the neocons. And from the very moment that Trump took office, and they were well aware that Trump wanted to repair relations with Russia, at least work with them against terrorism, and that he had very little interest in overthrowing the Syrian government. But Trump and many of us of his people in his cabinet, Robert Michael Flynn, when he was still the National Security Advisor, and others, Pompei at the CIA, and Mad Dog Mattis, really have it out for Iran. They see Iran as a big threat to U.S., which means Saudi influence in the region. And of course, Saudi and Iran are at each other's throats, and Syria and Yemen is just, symptomatic of that. Right. This is the game now, to try to sell the plan, the neocon Brookings Plan B, deconstructing Syria, the partition of East Syria into a Sunni or Salafistan against Iran to break up this arc of influence. They couldn't do it with the whole country, but then they'll do it there. Now, the U.S. is allied with the Kurdish, the Syrian Democratic Forces, as they call it, which is mostly 90% the YPG and 10% a scattering of local Arab tribes who weren't thrilled with ISIS. Some of them had actually been part of ISIS once and then decided they didn't like it very much and so on. That's in northeast Syria. And they've had some success there, and the Syrian government and Russia really haven't mined, because the Kurds have never really seriously fought the Syrian government over 6 years of war, despite enormous pressure from the West for them to do so. The Syrian government and Russia have both provided them with arms, funding, close air support at times. They have spent most of this time defending themselves for survival against ISIS, and then starting to move back against ISIS and take territory away from them. But they've also spent a great deal of time fighting the CIA-backed moderate rebels, hardcore Islamists.
Right.
And that has been across North Syria. Now, the Kurds have moved down and are assaulting Raqqa. But the Kurds are not a viable vector for the United States as a local proxy force to overtake all of East Syria, particularly anything south of Raqqa. Even Raqqa is already going too far, because the majority of the population there is Sunni tribes who do not get along well with the Kurds, and they're simply, not someone that they can justify taking over that part of the country and handing it over for. They're not a viable partition partner. Plus, the Kurds have been cooperating in multiple places with the Syrian government and with Russia, and they've never really fought the Syrian government in any kind of serious way over the last 6 years. There's numerous incidents of cooperation, transfer of territory, and so on that we could point to even recently. So the U.S. needs this Sunni force that they have tried for 6 years to create as moderates and failed. The new Syrian army down in al-Taf was the latest. And the idea was to link up these two forces, the Kurds in the north with a new Syrian army, Sunni rebel force, which has never materialized in sufficient numbers, and move north. And these would move into Deir ez-Zor. Deir ez-Zor is the last significant province outside of Raqqa in the east. The problem is that Deir ez-Zor's capital city has been maintained by the Syrian government throughout the war under constant siege of ISIS for over 4 years now. Really a heroic Stalingrad-esque defense of Deir ez-Zor. And there's still 100,000 Syrian civilians that the army has been protecting there. The U.S. has nominally controls the air skies over there, over that area, but they have never used it to defend Deir ez-Zor from ISIS. In fact, on two occasions, coalition aircraft have bombed Syrian government forces during ISIS attacks on Deir ez-Zor. As a city, Deir ez-Zor, if you wanted to take East Syria, Deir ez-Zor would really be essential if you wanted to partition the country, because you need population centers to base around.
And it's a crossroads of the two main highways there.
And it is a crucial – that's where the population centers develop out in the east, is around these highway routes, because it largely is desert. Now, there most recently, the New York Times even commented itself that there is talk that the U.S. And its proxies, in this case the Syrian Democratic Forces, are in talks with ISIS to allow them to escape from Raqqa without serious fight as long as they move into Deir ez-Zor and attack the Syrian government there. The idea being that they would use ISIS as a battering ram, hoping that the increased numbers from Raqqa and the desperation would finally be enough to allow ISIS to overrun Deir ez-Zor, at which point they could then take Deir ez-Zor from ISIS, right. Because they can't, they're not quite ready yet to be seen as openly warring with the Syrian government, bar the isolated incidences we've seen. So that's what's going on right now. And if even the New York Times is talking about it, that's already a pretty far along, I would say. So with these strikes around al-Taf out there in southeast Syria, south of Deir ez-Zor, the Syrian army in the last few days made kind of a Hail Mary pass and stretched out its forces and just went around this U.S. military base and its self-declared safe zone out there and ran all the way across the desert, wiping out ISIS quite handily along the way, and reached the Iraqi border, basically surrounding or boxing in the U.S. base southeast Syria on this, along the Jordanian-Iraqi border. So that if the U.S. wants to send its forces and its proxies north towards Deir ez-Zor and Raqqa there, they've now got to go through and fight through Syrian government territory, not ISIS territory. And this is a very serious development, because now, and Russia, I think, has made quite clear that it will defend Syrian government forces out there if the U.S. seeks to go outside of this little box and push further north in a land grab. So things are quite serious in the last few days. The Pentagon has accused that actually Russian forces have been involved too. Mattis was saying that he didn't see that this would have, that the Russians and the Syrians would do this. Well, yeah, how terrible of them taking back their own country and keeping you from seizing more territory in it. And within just the last 24 hours, news reports have come out that the U.S. is moving HIMARS long-range artillery pieces into Al-Tanf.
Oh, boy.
Now, what it intends to do with those, my guess that would be those large pieces of artillery are probably mostly for defensive purposes, a warning perhaps. Certainly, they indicate that the U.S. is in no hurry to evacuate from Al-Tanf, but there are some right across the border in Jordan. There have long been a collection of U.S. Military equipment, tanks, armor, measuring upwards of 100 pieces, American. And this is out there, it's American troops, British troops, and Norwegian troops, of all things. Yeah, right. And these are both in Jordan and in Syria in this occupied area. So things are heating up there. This is a war of maneuver right now. Everyone knows ISIS is on its last legs. ISIS isn't really a threat to anyone at this point. The game is who can take ISIS territory and claim it for their own. Will it be the Syrian government and its allies? Or will it be the U.S. And its various proxies? I said that I don't think that the Syrian government or the Russians consider the Syrian Democratic Forces, that basically the YPG, the Kurds, as a serious threat. They've never fought the Syrian government, and they believe that they can be negotiated with at the end of the day, and will probably receive some degree of autonomy. That'll have to be settled in negotiations. There'll be minimalist and maximalist demands on both sides, but the Kurds, it can be dealt with. They are being dealt with continually over the last few years. But of course, the Sunni Islamists, the moderate rebels, that's another story entirely. Yeah. But without a significant proxy force out there and unable to transport large numbers of jihadis from Idlib, the U.S. simply hasn't been able to create a sizable new Syrian army. So any fighting that happens will be mostly between the U.S. and its Western allies against the Syrian government and its allies. Rather, there's just not enough proxies there to do it.
Let's look slightly behind that generic language at the Syrian government and their allies to the U.S. and Russia shooting at each other, which is where this seems to be heading. Perhaps.
Absolutely. That is the potential out there. Now, with three attacks on the Syrian government in the last month alone, I think Russia has been more than patient with the United States. Now, they've mildly referred to this as violations of international law and so on. But really, Russia is still giving the U.S., Trump in this case, and Mattis, you should say, because he seems to be running. He's certainly running the military completely on his own, and it seems to be he's essentially running foreign policy. And at least when it comes to places like Syria and Ukraine, etc., to recognize that it's lost, that the game is over, that they've been strategically outmaneuvered every time, that all their plans to train up proxies, the takeover parts of the country against the Syrian government have failed, and they're giving them space to recognize that and withdraw with some amount of dignity, giving them an off ramp, as it were, to save face. And if the U.S. can participate in the Kurds seem to be making progress on Raqqa, whether they actually take it or whether ISIS just is allowed to evacuate aside. Trump can still claim some type of victory there. But, you know, without taking Deir ez-Zor or something, you know, significant territory out there in the east, the idea that they can't partition the country. And that's really what we're looking at, you know, the partition of East Syria. And right now, with the U.S. forces boxed in, they can't link up to do that. And it's a very dangerous game. And the U.S., of course, could decide, you know, not to allow this Syrian-Russian victory. Certainly that's what the neocons, you know, are hoping for. But we haven't seen a firm indication of whether the U.S. is prepared to escalate to outright war with the Syrian government, which means also with Iran and Russia, right. Potentially,
right.
Or will back down. Except the face-saving taking of Iraq as a defeat of ISIS, and then be willing to, at the end of the day, transfer this territory back to the Syrian government. You know, and it has to be said that the U.S.'s support of the Kurds, while it doesn't particularly bother the Russian government or Syria, who have also worked with the Kurds, it seriously bothers NATO's Turkey, and also the Iraqi government that the U.S. has been working with because of the separation threat of their own Kurds. And the Iraqi Kurds, the Barzani clans, are basically in control of northern Iraq, and they are de facto autonomous at this point and have been for several years there.
Yeah, now they have, you know, if the proper political arrangement among Kurds is reached, they suddenly have an army.
Yeah, they do. Well, I mean, also the Turkish army is decamped throughout northern Iraq against the wishes of the federal government, but in alignment with the Barzani clans, because oil is shipped straight out of the Kurdish-controlled areas to Turkey. It doesn't go through Baghdad. Taxes are not paid and so on. It's not distributed through the government, but is sold right off by the Barzani clime grants. And it has to be noticed here that the Kurds are certainly not one monolith. In fact, the Barzani Kurds in Iraq are mortal enemies of the YPG in Syria and the PKK in Turkey, and are instead allied with Turkey, which you might think is rather strange for Kurds, but you know this is being what they are, and even the Kurds aren't a monolith. So they've cooperated with the Turkish government in attacking the YPG several times. So it's a mess. The U.S. Policy at a strategic level is again incoherent and at times completely at odds with itself. U.S. proxies fighting U.S. proxies, U.S. allies angered at U.S. relationships with U.S. proxies and attacking those proxies and so on. It's a real mess. The U.S. has made a complete mess of Syria all along. And they continue to not have a real viable plan for anything, but they refuse to, give up and just get out. They continue to be a threat. I would say that, the end game of the Syrian conflict is now within sight. But that sight is still far off in the distance. It's a long, hard slog with a lot of sacrifices still required to get there. But with this war of maneuver, one seemingly strategically in the east now, unless the U.S. decides to go full-scale war, and with the jihadists penned in Idlib and the imminent fall of ISIS all across East Syria, there is an end game in sight. There is an end game in sight.
Mm. And it's been a bloody 6 years for sure. So
a bloody, and that said, there will be a lot more bloodshed, before it's all over. But at least there's a potential end to the conflict. And large parts of Syria are now restored to order. You'll see now that East Aleppo has been liberated by the government. Suddenly, Western reporters don't want to report on it at all. But by all accounts, from the people that have been there, the Western reporters, often from the alt media that have been there, order normalcy is starting to return. The people are returning. They're extremely grateful to the Syrian government forces and so on.
Mark, thank you very much. A pleasure as always.
Thanks for having me, Doc.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.